All right. I'm so ready for this to be over.
Absolutely. I think we all are. But it's good to hear that from the secretary who's responsible for a lot of this.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it is Tuesday, July 26th, and we are at the Kentucky Historical Society in Frankfort. Dr. Mandy Higgins interviewing Secretary Remainder of the Cabinet for Health and Family Services. Please spell your name for me.
Yes, Eric Friedlander, ERICFRIEDLANDER.
Thank you, and thanks for being here today.
Oh, my pleasure.
I want to take us back to before the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
How did you join the current administration?
Oh, well, I was working for the city of Louisville. I was working for Louisville Metro Government. My title was Chief Resilience Officer, which is the best title ever, and working in a group called Community Services. So it was Resilience and Community Services, and I loved it. I loved it. I loved working for the city. I loved the folks I worked with. I was having just working on homelessness issues, working on a bunch of things that were sort of adjacent to what the cabinet does, but it was a community action agency. Anyway, it was my heart. I really didn't have any intention of coming back to state government. I just didn't. I thought I was done. And then one day got a call. Would I be interested in coming and talking to the governor-elect, which is a tremendous honor. And I was still trying to figure out exactly what I was going to do or say, but I was starting to lean. They asked me to be on the transition, and I'm like, well, sure, that'd be great. And so I was on the transition team, and then as I was on the transition team, I got a call one weekend to come and meet with the governor-elect, and he invited me to be the acting secretary, which I decided, okay, I'll do it. Because when I was with the transition team, first time I went back to the cabinet and pulled up and parked my car, and I got out of my car and I didn't vomit, and I was really impressed with myself. Little did I know.
Yeah. So acting secretary was after December when he was inaugurated.
Yes.
And
yes.
Then pretty quickly things changed.
Yes.
So what happened there?
So, you know, we'd heard about something happening in China, and you know, you know, because you hear about viruses in other countries, Ebola, things like that, right? And gets contained, and you know, it really doesn't get over here much. Although, you know, we had HIV, and I wonder what that's going to be like. And then it started to continue to spread, right? And then we hear it's in the U.S. And, you know, I'm like, oh, please, please, don't come to Kentucky. Yeah, yeah. And, you know, sometimes we're not terribly mobile here in this state. We, you know, we like to stay in our communities. And I'm like, you know, maybe we'll get some insulation there. And no. And I had left the city and come to the state. And so here comes a worldwide pandemic. I thought I'd made a really poor choice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Before we get into the more nitty-gritty of the pandemic,
yeah.
Can you tell a little bit about what the cabinet does?
Oh, sure. The Cabinet for Health and Family Services is a gigantic cabinet. We are an $18.2 billion cabinet. It's what our budget was this year, and actually what we spent this year. And it's a lot like Health and Human Services at the federal level, only it's for the state of Kentucky. So we have public health. Dr. Stack, believe it or not, actually works for me. We have Medicaid, which is a $12 billion program. We have the Department for Community-Based Services, so that's all the social workers and family support and all of the eligibility pieces. I think that I was really in the beginning primarily talking about. We have our Department for Aging and Independent Living, which did the senior meals and things like that. We have the Department for Behavioral Health, Developmental and Intellectual Disabilities. Their role, right, as we come out of the pandemic, they do a lot with substance use. Their role is only going to expand as time goes on, as well as then some fun places like family resource centers and volunteerism and disability determinations in the Office of Children with Special Health Care Needs, where I used to work. I've worked at the cabinet since 1985, and I always run into people, lots of people who weren't born yet then, and I try not to hold a grudge.
I was born in 85, so your career and me are together.
Okay. See, that only hurts a little bit.
Well, but I was the child of the school's peace pathologist.
Right. So oh, nice. Very good. Probably so, yeah. Absolutely. So, anyway, so a lot of really, really good organizations doing a lot of good work, and just I'm committed to trying to have the cabinet do great work. Yeah.
That so you mentioned you're taking over this cabinet that touches mm-hmm. every Kentuckian in some way.
Right.
And then this global pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
So tell me a little bit about that, like, say February 15th to March 6th.
So, actually, during that time period, Dr. Stack came on board, and I can't tell you how lucky we are as a state that that happened. It didn't have to, right? I talk about it as grace, right? Because the team that was in place didn't have to be in place. It could have been a very different team. And so the fact that Dr. Stack started like 2 weeks basically before COVID hit Kentucky, how fortunate are we? Hasn't worked in state government. And so first, Dr. Stack came. And we'd had kind of a scare with a hemorrhagic fever. It's a whole different story. The team that really didn't handle that very well because of his leadership, all of a sudden that team handled this well. So enough about that. Was getting to talk with the governor because we had just rebid the MCO, the managed care organizations and Medicaid. We had a lot of interesting things happening even before.
Right.
And so it was really focused on mostly on that. And then it wasn't really until the beginning of March that it's like, okay, this is coming, right? And we didn't know anything. We didn't know how virulent it would be. We didn't know, you know, all those factors about how contagious it is. I won't go into that. But, you know, we were all like becoming epidemiologists on the fly. And so I think the best way to describe how I was feeling coming up to March 6th and a little bit beyond was denial. because who could foresee this? We couldn't foresee it.
But that didn't come across as you were talking to Kentucky. So can you tell me a little bit about those early
moments
of trying to communicate this out to your fellow members of the panel?
Sure. Well, first, I think the governor did a brilliant job of having us up there and really being able to answer questions, right? And to try to, just reassure folks, this is serious. This is serious. But I remember one of the first things, maybe it was the first press conference, because I wanted to say, hey, local health departments and public health, this is like what they do, right? They are designed to help us, maybe not worldwide pandemics, but that's part of the design of tracing disease, tracing contacts. Not to the scale, like nowhere near the scale, but this is what we do. And it was interesting because the health departments were like, somebody knows what we do. It was very exciting. And so that was the first piece. And the second was to be reassuring, right? Here's how you can get food assistance. And we had to change on a dime how we did that. We moved to virtual. We moved online. And, you know, some of our offices were closed, right? You could drop off paper, but it was a completely different way of doing things. Everybody went home. Nobody knew if that was going to work. No idea. And so it was about trying to project calm and competence as best we could.
Yeah. You, I don't, I think it was you. So I was like, I'm a Kentuckian.
Yeah.
For life, so I watch all this too. And I have young children.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it was you who told, who came like the third day maybe to talk about how to talk about this with kids.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk a little bit about that decision?
So actually, it might have been Dr. Brenzel, who's a child psychiatrist, mm-hmm. right? Works for the cabinet. And actually, the governor said, you know, we need to probably figure out how we talk to kids about this. I've got your person for you. Alan Brenzel, he's a pediatrician and child psychiatrist. Works for the cabinet, worked for the Department of Community-Based Services, now works for Behavioral Health, works through UK, and said, let's help give parents some words and reassurance of how to speak to kids. And so I think that was one of the things that was helpful. You know, again, we were trying to be helpful. What tools can we provide people that will make this easier? How do you navigate this, right? So it was early. He may have given me talking points, but at one point he sat down, right, a couple of times when he came up and really went into detail about how you do that.
And there was a lot of talk, you know, you mentioned that you were, and I didn't know this, that your title is resilience.
Yeah.
There's a lot of talk of individual care and yes. mental health.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't see that from a national standpoint.
Right.
So why in Kentucky was this important?
Well, it's important to the governor. But I think, and I've been doing my time at Resilience, and it was 100 resilient cities funded by the Rockefeller Foundation, and I got to travel all over the world. It was the coolest job. But this was the definition of resilience. It was the definition of an acute shock, right? Which is how we define how you are resilient, how you bounce back from that. So you have to have that concept from the beginning. And so that resilience, helping people be resilient, helping people, that had to be a primary focus of what we were doing.
One more of this early.
Yeah, yeah.
Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
And the interpretation.
She's so cool.
She's so cool, right?
Yeah.
That was also something that came very early.
Yes.
And can you talk about why that was important?
Well, I think, so I've worked with Virginia for years. I was at the Commission for Children with Special Health Care Needs, right? And it was we did a lot of audiology, a lot of speech pathology, a lot of that kind of work. And so I'd worked with Virginia. I think Virginia is not a shy person, if you know her. And so I think she reached out and said, hey, we need to communicate to everybody we possibly can. And the governor was a yes immediately. And so she started appearing, and I'm like, oh, Virginia, it's good to see you. So it was nice to see somebody that I'd worked with over time, and I know her tremendous competence and passion and advocacy. And so to have her there, again, it was one of those things that he started a trend, I think, to have the interpretation, because we know that folks who are deaf and hard of hearing are one of our largest differently abled minorities, right? And so, of course, we need to reach out. And we had School for the Deaf, and, you know, in Kentucky, we do cochlear implants, and we have a really good early childhood screening program. So it was really important. And it was wonderful to see that became such a big part. And, like, she became a rock star.
Yeah. When we talked to Dr. Stack, he told us he had his own sign.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Bowtie.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a moniker through Virginia?
Not that I know of. We never talked about whether I did. So.
Well, I hope that you can, maybe I'll call her.
Yeah,
find out.
That sounds good.
Can you tell me a little bit, so moving on from that initial
yeah.
part,
mm-hmm.
Moving into deeper into March,
right.
into April and May, how were things changing and how?
Oh my gosh. Again, we didn't know what we were dealing with. And again, I will say, I think I was in denial. A friend who owns a restaurant, and actually was in the Courier, I guess almost a year ago, where she said, I reached out to my friend, Eric Breedlander, and I said, I think, you know, I'm planning for a couple of weeks. I said, oh no, it's going to be longer than that. I think it's going to be 5 weeks.
I have to tell you. I sent my, so I have two direct reports,
uh-huh.
and I sent them home. I left March 12th,
mm-hmm.
And state government closed like right. last week, right? And they're like, well, we're going to take 2 weeks. And I said, take six.
Back in June. Yeah, right.
I'm only off by a year.
Right.
I feel okay about that.
Yeah. So, yes. Yeah. I mean, we didn't know. Now, we're probably in denial. And the way I thought about it was, in 3 months. And it was starting like, okay, we're going to have a vaccine. So the characteristic of those early days was it was just hard to see, because we'd never experienced it before, what we were actually in for. And we didn't know, right? Mask guidance changed, which is actually beautiful, because that's what science is supposed to do. We're supposed to, like, look for evidence and see what works and what doesn't work. And that's what happened. It's exactly what was supposed to happen.
And you had a lot of different sorts of teams to manage.
Yes.
That. So how were you managing, say, social workers versus some of the healthcare or public health?
So I was, again, Dr. Stack is fantastic. He is who he is. So Dr. Stack really took on a lot of talking to hospitals, right? And Adam Mather, who's the inspector general, took on a lot of talking to the nursing facilities. He also, along with some other folks, we had all the departments. I encouraged them to take up their roles, right? They need to take their roles and figure out how they would assist. So, Department for Aging and Independent Living that did senior meals, and we talked about that quite a bit, right? We doubled the meals. We, you know, over a million meals got delivered because we were all working together. Department for Community-Based Services, we had to kind of alter how we did visitations and alter how we worked with the child caring facilities and alter how social workers did their jobs and send everybody, all the family support workers who do the eligibility, send them home. This is your job now. This has been your job. But today, and now for the next, well, we're trying to make it permanent as much as possible. You have a new job and a new way of doing things. Well, we had to do that on a dime. We spun on a dime. And behavioral health, right? We're Dr. Brenzel. And so we were looking at how do we support from a trauma-informed perspective, how do we support folks who are in facilities, and we also have facilities. Behavioral health has facilities. So we were experiencing the same thing everybody else was. And so trying to keep information out, trying to keep morale and spirits up, adjusting to an entirely different type of work environment where we still had a lot of work to do. No question about that. And we even at various times asked for volunteers to help us with the phones or asked for volunteers to help us in public health. And people stepped up. So it was trying to keep everybody coordinated, trying to keep communication open in a time when we were all doing it by Teams and Zoom. And do we like Zoom? Do we like Teams? What is this? We hadn't done any of that before. So it was really inventing things on the fly and being open to trying things. Worked for Mayor Greg Fisher, really good mayor. And he's one of the first folks in government that said to me, well, it's okay to fail. Just fail fast and learn. And so I was able to take that and say, look, we're going to try things that are really different. They are not going to always work. And as long as we don't get dug in and say, okay, this isn't working, let's try something different. That's what we do. And that's what we did.
How did your, we just focus on the core team.
Yeah.
How did they handle and respond to your sort of fail fast mentality?
It takes a second when you're in government to like get used to that, because that's not the norm, mm-hmm. right? We always like to, you know, we can't fail. What it did, I think, was allow people to be creative, right? And folks were creative. I mean, how we responded to senior meals, as an example, or how we responded to how we were going to issue SNAP benefits, or how food support, right? Or how are we going to support child care centers, right? How are we going to do that? Now, where's the funding coming from? And let's come up with a way that we're going to do that. We had to be creative. And I think really, because I didn't see many failures, but what I saw was a lot of creativity. And that's what I think the permission was. It is, be creative. We're going to do things very differently, and it's okay. And we'll all learn together.
Yeah, and that came through a little bit. So can you tell, I think this is, it's getting at something.
Right? Yeah.
One of the things that the governor introduced pretty early in his talks was this idea of Team Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk a little bit about both how that, if you were a part of it, how it developed, and then how that translated into what you're talking about with the creativity and response?
So, actually, it felt pretty organic. It came up fast. And I think it just, what the governor was trying to do was give the message of, we're all in this together. And how to put it? Nice cut here. You know, it's like our state motto, right? United we stand, divided we fall. This was the message, and it fit right in with it. And there's all of those, you know, we all need to pull together, and we're all feeling this together, and we're all experiencing this together. And there were so many examples of neighbors helping neighbors, and all of the communities pulling together in ways that they really hadn't before. And having the opportunity to show and demonstrate that we could come together as a community, particularly early, that was a beautiful thing to see. And I think that Team Kentucky helped folks buy into that. Now, I stole it a little bit within the Cabinet for Health and Family Services, and I started communicating with my folks as Team CHFS, right? Because we all need to pull together. We can't be in our little departmental silos. This very different. I had teams from several different departments that were working on initiatives. And so we expanded Medicaid, right? And we expanded the concept. Let me try that one again. Okay. We worked on making Medicaid eligibility easy, right? As easy as possible. We boiled a 10-page application to a 1-page go on, start to fill it out. And it was called presumptive eligibility, where folks, we insured probably another 120,000 folks throughout the pandemic who might not have otherwise been able to be insured, who might not have gone all the way through the application process. And think about it, people lost jobs, people lost insurance. And so through the teeth of the pandemic, we helped folks have coverage. And very important to them, but also really important to the hospitals, really important to the nursing facilities, really important to all of healthcare that we do that. And we were able to accomplish that for almost a year. And then we pulled back because we were, at that point, thought we were past the major piece of the pandemic, which in some ways we really were. That's one of the things that I think we really did. That's one of the areas where I think we really did a good job and really helped Kentuckians. And the governor was very clear about that. How do we get people coverage? I can do that. We know how to do that. So we wanted to make sure that we did it and made it as easy as possible for people.
Can you tell me a little bit about the emotions you were feeling as you were communicating these things out?
Oh, there were so many emotions. One of the first nursing facilities, right, Drayton Oaks, was one of the ones that just had a meltdown. Happened over the weekend, was on some of the calls there, and they were having to go to pieces. They just, and because they'd never experienced anything like that before. And so, and they were a good facility, right? So the COVID virus did not care whether you were a good facility or a bad facility or, you know, how much money you had or didn't have. Well, I just didn't care. It was a virus. So I knew one of the first people to pass in Trayton Oaks, a friend of my family's forever, like knew my parents before they knew each other, right? And so that was really emotional to go through that with some dear family friends. And it was hard. My mother, at that point, she had Alzheimer's and dementia. And she's an actress. She read talking books. She loved everybody. She went to all the plays and the operas and things like that. Boom. Shut down. In a house. Right? Her husband, my father passed about 5 years before. First time in her life she lived on her own. She did great. But, you know, then she's isolated. So, you know, folks would talk about, oh, you can't do that. It's just awful. And I'm like, I've got my mom at home, guys. I understand what that isolation is and what it does, and I'm experiencing it. So it was, there were lots of emotions, right? Because I think we had a really strong response. We have a governor that believes in science. Hooray, right? I mean, my gosh. And he backed us up the entire way. And we go to him, here's best practices, here's what we think we should do. And he was really great about that. And so there was that kind of pride, right? There was frustration because sometimes we weren't really clear on what the federal response was or even meant. There was sadness as we lost folks that we knew, because we lost folks we knew. Fear, you know, we were going and meeting with the governor every day, and I'm like, oh my gosh, what if I'm the person that brings in COVID? You know, I mean, we were careful, but still, it's a virus, right? And so, have you not had COVID? Yay. And I should say yet. But it was frightening. It was frightening. And then there was some, it was kind of cool to be on with the governors. You know, I was a piece on a bingo square. It was very exciting. I think I was a double drinker. I'm not sure. that's pretty heady stuff. It was hard. Again, it was hard to imagine it, right? It's hard to like wrap your head around it. And what's that concept look like? Now, I'm not like a rock star like the governor or Dr. Stack, right? I wasn't on that much, but I was in the beginning. But, you know, it's just, it's amazing how people responded was amazing as well.
On that same line, you all shared a lot of emotions in the briefings.
Yeah.
Why was that important?
I don't know if we could control it all the time. I mean, honestly, it really snuck up on you up there because there was so much going on, because we were working so hard. We were at the beginning, right? We were on 7 days a week. You know, we were coming in all the time. So it was a grind. I'm the elder statesman there, but it was a grind. And I'm glad Dr. Stack is younger than me and the governor's younger than me, because I think they probably fared better than I. But so there was some exhaustion in there where, you know, your emotions are a little closer to the surface at that point. And with everything that was going on, all the work that was happening at the cabinet, all the work that was happening at home, and all the emotion of, like, you could feel what was going on in community oftentimes, sometimes negatively. You could feel that. And it was hard to contain sometimes.
It really came through, and I think it mattered. Mm-hmm. I've heard that from some of the other folks we've talked to for the series,
mm-hmm.
Particularly the mask makers, that they wanted, that they saw the emotion, and they wanted to, like, wrap. Y'all.
Right.
And that's where this quote came from.
Yeah.
Which leads me into these other questions.
Yeah.
The mask. So, starting with the mask,
uh-huh.
I'm going to ask a tough question.
Yeah.
Were you surprised by the reactions to masking?
Yes. It seems a simple thing to do, right? And really, the masks would protect you a little bit But what they really protected was the other person. And I just... So it's a matter of perspective, and I try to have this perspective. There was a lot of compliance. There was a lot of mass compliance, and we can't ever underestimate that. Most people complied. And it was just disappointing when it became political. Again, I said earlier, so fortunate that we have a governor that believes in science. One case every place. And we tried to model that. So then at that point, you're just trying to be a good model.
And I don't remember who, but someone actually made a mask on uh-huh. it? Was it you that actually made the mask on a briefing? Maybe out of a...
I don't think I made a mask. But no, we had a one of the nurses from the Department of Public Health came in and showed how to make a mask.
Yeah. Did you ever make a mask?
I don't know if I'm, well, yeah, you know, an emergency.
Yeah.
but, you know, the masks came pretty early. We had the camouflage masks. We actually had ordered masks through the Cabinet for Health and Family Services. So we had some K-chip masks, and I started wearing those a little bit. Mask Up Kentucky, and we made some for kids, and those are decent masks. They had little nose things that you could put down, and those were not bad. I don't know if they were, like, you know, N95 worthy. I don't know as that was the case, but they're you know, double fabric, so they were not bad. So we just started wearing them, and people started making masks, right? Lots of people made masks. My wife made masks. Some friends of ours made masks, so I had some very stylish masks. You know, something else to accessorize with, right?
Yeah.
I'm not sure I paid a whole lot of attention to that, but I tried. My wife did. You know, to walk into stores, right, the little that we did, to see folks on the street wearing masks, that was gratifying because most people listened.
Yeah, the interviews we've done with the mask makers have been a lot of that.
Mm-hmm.
We got calls, we knew people needed them,
right.
Couldn't find them, so we started making them.
Right.
And they have talked a little bit about the surprise in seeing their masks. So were you seeing masks, or do you
remember
any? Yeah.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about that?
So we did get sent masks, right? And the governor's office often got sent masks. And... That was really, it was, at that point, you were starting to see some turbulence, mm-hmm. right? And so when folks would reach out with those really nice gestures, it was so helpful. It was like, you know, it was a balm, right? And it was something that you knew you weren't alone. You knew folks were appreciating what we were trying to do. I think there were macaroni governors and Virginias that came in at some point. Mm-hmm. I mean, just really cool stuff. Mm-hmm. And so those kind of that kind of support, that kind of outpouring of support, physical demonstrations of support, they really meant a lot.
Can you talk a little bit about other gifts that you received?
I think I got one of those, you know, the governor got one of his mug things. I got one of those mug things. I got masks. I got, just some nice cards, which was always really good. They somehow, you know, I don't know what it is, but, I'd be having a pretty bad day for one reason or another. And then a card would come. And it was like, ooh, I needed that. And I can't tell you how often it just, like, came at the perfect time.
Very Kentucky thing.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned that you're not a rock star like the governor or like Dr. Sack.
No.
But do you feel like you've become, that you lost a little of an anonymity or you became a bit of a local celebrity?
No.
People don't stop you on the street.
It's very rare that that happens, and I'm fine with that because, you know, half the time, you know, they'll remember me from the Andy show, and the other half the time I got little kids coming up to me thinking I'm a Santa Claus. So one of the two, I accept both. So
yeah, when we talked to Dr. Stack, he mentioned the sort of shock of becoming this star.
Right.
But the ways that Kentuckians responded.
He had more of that.
Yeah.
He really did. I mean, almost all positive and a little negative.
Yeah. And did you receive any of the negative?
I really didn't. Occasionally, you could tell when somebody was, you know, squinting their eyes at you a little more. They didn't want to talk to you, or, you know, they'd see you and I'm asking, you know, who is this? But that was rare. That was rare.
Mm-hmm. So why, you know, all of this is coming around is the quilts, which we saw downstairs, if you remember, made out of.
I do want to say this. Occasionally we get negative calls at the cabinet. Mm-hmm. Now, the folks who answered the calls would screen them and not let them get to us. So there were folks on the front lines answering phones and taking flack. And taking flack, really, for the folks who were trying to do the work. So, you know, we always talk about Team Kentucky, or I talk about Team CHF. Yes. But it takes a whole team to support folks. The person who's the really the administrative assistant to Dr. Stack fielded a whole bunch of just nasty calls, right? And the folks who were in the ombudsman's office at the cabinet fielded a whole bunch of nasty calls and really in many ways shielded some of us from the worst of it. And I know folks don't think I recognize it sometimes, but it takes an entire team to make it work. And that's the kind of thing that goes unrecognized, you know, that the folks who are just like on the front lines and making a difference for everybody and allowing folks to feel that support and not feel the negative. And they're taking it themselves. That's why we talk about trauma and resilience, right? Everybody in the cabinet that I know of, and I think everybody in state government, right, had experiences like that, where they had to be a part of a team, like maybe hear something negative, right? Why are we doing, you know? And so, and yet, right, being a part of that team and being supportive. And that was everybody, right? So I don't want that to go unrecognized, because I think it does sometimes.
How did you support your staff as they were supporting you?
Right. So I tried to communicate. Taking my cue from the governor, right? You can't communicate too much. And so I tried to do that with different ways of communicating. I started podcasts. I did videos. I did some pieces of newsletter. I did some direct email, because different people read different things. And we had a lot of traumatic events during that time. It wasn't just COVID. Stuff was happening in Louisville that almost made me glad to be the cabinet in a worldwide pandemic. But, you know, we had a lot of things go on. And so trying to keep everybody focused on the work and bought into the fact that we had a mission and we had a job to do and we had fellow Kentuckians to support, and keeping that focus and the importance of what we were doing, and so that people could know that they were making a difference. And that's, I tried to communicate that a lot and still try to.
This is a little out of bounds of the...
That's okay.
what I asked you to come talk about.
Yeah.
But in that same time, there's been a push for more equity and pay for a number of your cabinet members, and a lot of focus within the cabinet to make sure that they are being supported. Do you think that your role in COVID helped make that more seen?
This is a whole different discussion.
It is.
But, and this will wrap around to the bear. So social workers always said that they felt retaliated against, right? And I said earlier, we talk about folks our mission, helping folks and communities live to their full potential. And we do that with what we call our five pillars. You might call them values. The first was equity. And we were focusing on equity. We were focusing on racial equity. We were focusing on, you know, equity across the board. Our second big pillar was resilience, right? This was before COVID, by the way. This was right when I came in. And resilience really was, because when I left the cabinet, something that I really regretted was that we never dealt with secondary trauma in the workforce. Social workers, we never dealt with secondary trauma. What on earth? I felt really bad when I left. So when I come back, I was determined, right? Because the resilience work just highlighted how important the trauma work is, right? Absolutely critical. And what the cabinet does? Absolutely critical. Economic support. So I'm going to go through all five. Because we don't talk about our programs enough about what they do, but the pandemic, wow. You know, we got to talk about SNAP. We got to talk about Medicaid and how important they were. Oh, everybody all of a sudden understood how important childcare was. Fantastic, right? And what that meant, not only to the folks who receive benefits, but SNAP, how much that supported grocers, Medicaid. Again, I talked about hospitals and doctors and nurses, and that's who it supported. And I tried to say that in the press conferences, right? I was trying to make that point. Don't feel bad about this. You are helping. You're helping your community by doing this. Talking about how to get to health and wellness, right? Unless you have those three, right? And the ubiquitous, because we want to be operational excellence. But, you know, it was really a lens through which we did all our work. So resilience and social workers. Get that back. Because we were talking about being resilient, how do you talk about that unless part of that is being able to speak up for yourself? And social workers forever have said, if we say anything, we're going to get retaliated against. And we tried to send the message of, I think we did, Marlon Miranda Straub, who's the commissioner of Department for Community-Based Services, did a great job of communicating that you get to part of resilience is being able to advocate for yourself. How can you advocate for your clients if you can't advocate for yourself? I don't get it. So the social workers really took that up. You know, like, don't use state, you can't use state email, you can't, you know, nothing of that. But they themselves advocated. So I've got two things that sit on my desk that I'm really, probably the things that are bring the most emotion out in me. One is this thing that the National Association of Social Workers gave me for being supportive of the social workers and really applauding their advocacy, right? It's what I came back to hopefully try to do, and that was really emotional. And so that is one of two things on my desk, right? The other is the patchwork fair.
Yeah, tell me a little bit about the patchwork fair.
So, Ohana, which means family, and the reason they sent was because, you know, I really was talking about SNAP and food security and what was happening with all of that. So, got a wonderful note, right, from the folks who did the quilt, and they said, this is for you, and thank you for supporting us and supporting families. And again, it just came at a great time because, you know, the daily grind of COVID and trying to respond had really started to, masks, no mask, we were starting to really fight. Mm-hmm. And so for that to come at that time, and to really focus in on what else the cabinet does, right, which is a lot of what I was talking about, was just really felt so supportive. That's a place of honor. And so when I Zoom or Teams, it's something that you can see in the background.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
Do you remember what any of the sentiments of the note?
Oh, yeah. So, yeah. So I can read it. Would that be okay?
Yeah.
All right. Let me read it. But I need my glasses because I'm old. We established that. I've been working as long as you're alive. I'm not going to let you forget that. Mr. Friedlander, I'm Gina Hudson, founder of the Kentucky Mask Makers Quilt Group, and I'd like to introduce you to your new friend, Ohana. Ohana is made from leftover quilt squares that we were not able to be included in either the Kentucky Mask Makers Quilt or its companion scrapbook. Since there were a few squares left from the project, we wanted to use every square in some way. We decided we could use them best as bears for some very special people who have helped raise up Kentuckians. We hope you feel all the love, which I did, stitched in the quilt when you look at Ohana. We all know that Ohana means family. Ohana, the bear's details feature bright, playful colors representing families and children. Her fresh fruit mask, she had a mask, is a thank you for all you do to help those who may be experiencing food insecurity. Thank you for all you have done for Kentucky. May you and your family be safe and blessed. Sincerely, Regina Hudson and the Kentucky Mask Makers Quilt Group. And so that was really sweet. And like I say, came at a time when controversy was really kicking up. And to feel that support was wonderful. I actually was in D.C. with the AIDS Quilt, right? And one of those times that it made it to D.C. And I think it was the first time. So, you know, the whole symbolism around the quilt and the squares and the importance of that and the love that goes into that and the remembrance that goes into that, I was really touched by it.
It's a really powerful piece. Mm-hmm. Did you see it in the Capitol as well?
Yes.
Yeah. Do you remember any feelings around it being that hanging in the Capitol?
Well, again, you know, I was relating to it off of the AIDS quilt. And so to see it there and to know that it was community support and represented community support, it was really, how to put it? I don't know how else to say, but to feel that support in a time when we weren't sure what that support and where that support was reassuring and comforting.
It's
okay.
Restate the question. So you had that reassurance.
Mm-hmm.
You worked for Kentucky for a long time.
Yeah.
All 37 years.
Mm-hmm.
For Kentucky.
Yeah.
What have you learned about Kentuckians that you didn't know before? Mm.
I don't know as I didn't know it. So I've been fortunate in my time in state government to work for a whole bunch of different agencies. I was over family resource centers for a while. I was acting over behavioral health. I call myself the utility infielder for the cabinet for many years. I know that there are a lot of good folks out there that have a heart to help, particularly some of the programs I was working on, family resource centers. I mean, those folks are amazing and community oriented. And pull from the community for folks to help and are not afraid to ask. And when they do, when we asked for help in communities, people stepped forward. When I was with the city, for 4 years I was with the city, we had the senior meals program there. So it was all run by volunteers. I mean, even folks in Louisville are nice. I know the rest of the state probably doesn't believe it. But it was all run by volunteers, except for, like, the, you know, people who were responsible for the contracts and things like that and marking the routes. But it's just an amazing program of folks that come together. And you can see it in whenever we had some disasters. One of my one of my favorite Family Resource Center stories. We were doing an orientation. We had an orientation in Nancy, Kentucky. We were driving, taking people around to different centers. There's a truck in front of us that had not tied their load down well. It was all a bunch of wood that just, they took off and it all fell out in the street. All was the Family Resource Centers. We stopped the car, ran out, helped them load up, tied it down better, and got back in the car and went. I mean, that's kind of the help that I've seen all across the state with people who are willing to pitch in. Oh my gosh, the tornadoes. And the amount of volunteerism that occurred and the support that people gave each other is just amazing. I did a podcast with a social worker who the governor mentioned her in his State of the Commonwealth address. Her tornado just missed her, and the road was cut off, and she went out and basically rescued 13 people and had somebody pass in her arms. I mean, just, there are those kinds of stories of individual courage, resilience, right, that are all over the place. And if we look for the best in people, we can find it. And that's, sometimes I focus on that when I have my feet underneath me, right, and don't get buffeted by all the negative stuff. There's a lot out there when you ask folks to help that they're willing to do.
Can you talk about the volunteering around the vaccine?
Oh, yeah. So a lot of medical professionals came out and volunteered to help with the vaccines. I mean, it was, it was done. The vaccines came out fast, relatively speaking, you know. Other vaccines take 5-10 years. What if we were there, right? So we have a vaccine that's effective and works. It really does work. There are no tracking devices. I guarantee you the tracking device is that little, you know, rectangular thing that we all carry about and call phones, but mostly we use it for words. it was amazing. And people were so excited, particularly early, when demand outstripped supply the first several months, right? How do you roll that out and get that to the most vulnerable populations? And there was a lot of work done there. We identified folks who were homebound, right? We have a lot of programs for people who are homebound. And we identified who they are, and we tried to get vaccines out to them and tried to get them into vaccine. We had a lot of partners. Private partners, public partners. Kroger was a great partner. Walgreens is a great partner. We had some really good partners who were very helpful along the way. A lot of the hospitals who were used to handling vaccines. And Secretary Gray, Jim Gray, did a great job along with us of really distributing vaccines to where they could be used. And that was a massive rollout. So it felt like we were doing well.
Do you remember, did you get to see any of the mass clinics, or do you remember the feeling of as people got shots?
I was so happy to get a shot. I'll just go for my, like, yeah. when can I get one? And for my mom too, right? Mm-hmm. She was 89, right? So getting her a shot, it felt right. I was pretty emotional about it, and seeing people line up at the local health department, right, who all wanted to get shots, and the nurses who were doing that, who were happy to play their part in getting that done. Like I was saying, there are all these team members, Team Kentucky members, who did so much, and so the folks. To the folks who were given the shots, to the folks who were making sure that, the arms got swapped right, and directing the traffic in. Everybody played a part.
That's pretty incredible.
Mm-hmm. And we'd never done that before. We didn't know how to do any of this, all right? Everything was a learning experience as we went. No idea how to do any of that. None.
You relied on what you mentioned. You had a number of partners, both in state government and outside of state government. Mm-hmm. How did that work for you all logistically?
So, Dr. Stack has a great team. And so coordinating that, and some folks from the cabinet who also great team, particularly around, you know, getting services to nursing facilities, because that's where the most they were having the most catastrophic, right, outcomes, and did. It took coordinating with when's the vaccine coming in, how many doses are folks getting, what parts of the state need it. So it really was this distribution, right? Dr. Stack had somebody with a spreadsheet, right? Here's how many we're getting. Here's how many folks are getting. So we had to keep track of a lot of things together. And they just, it was hard work, but they just did it.
It was incredible from the other side. Uh-huh. Like, I'm a historian.
Right. You know a lot. We talk about 1918 in
that's
a second.
True. To sort of watch those decisions being made and the way that mm-hmm. they're communicated,
mm-hmm.
And to think about, you know, I was one of those ones that was like, how can I jump this line?
Yeah, right. Right.
But then also the patients. To wait.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So how did you balance that? The desire for folks who were like me, who were just very anxious, and those who knew they needed to wait.
Right. Well, we tried to communicate where we were going first, right? We went by age range, which is, I think it's logical. Look, if you were older, you were far more susceptible to really serious disease. If you had some co-occurring disorder, an asthma or something like that, you know, you were far more susceptible to serious disease. So we just tried, again, I think I said it earlier, so cool to have a governor who believed in science, right? Because the whole way through, we were led by science. And that's exactly, who do we need, who needs it first? And who needs it the most? And that's how we went for distribution.
And it worked.
Yeah, and it worked.
I was vaccinated at the horse park.
Oh, nice.
The day, a year to the day that I left work.
Wow.
It's my like my one thing.
Yeah, that's cool.
And it was an incredible experience to sit in that
mm-hmm.
as people were coming through,
mm-hmm.
older and younger, and knowing, you know, as you now know, I'm 37. So I was in that, like, do you remember the New York Times did a graph?
Yeah.
Of, like, when you will get it, and that was, like,
right.
Like last.
Yeah.
50,000 of Kentuckians that mm-hmm. I would be able to report. Thank you, state government, for getting me up the list a little bit.
Yeah.
Communications person. Anyway, to sit in those spaces was really incredible. Did
yeah.
you have any experience around those mass sites?
A little bit, Louisville site, you know, a little bit. But at that point, I have to say, I was still kind of keeping my nose to the grindstone, right? I didn't get to, it's taken me a long time to even get comfortable to go out and visit. I'm still a little skittish. I'm probably, you know, the small C conservative of the group. because, you know, it's still of concern. Yeah. It's still of concern. I'm vaxxed, boosted, all that stuff. And so, it really, there was a lot to coordinate inside. All because even at that point, we were still trying to get benefits out the door. We had the pandemic EBT piece, which was about, okay, what's, we got to work with the school systems. And that was at DCBS. Jason Dunn is the hero there. Coordinating with schools and coordinating with our vendors on cards and coordinating with when does that get loaded on a card, right? You don't think about that stuff. How are we going to send it out? The first time we just sent it out to everybody, and then people are like, I shouldn't be getting this card. And it was confusing. So, okay, well, next time we'll try it a different way. So, I mean, we tried probably three iterations of how we got the cards out, maybe four. But it was like, okay, what worked this time? What didn't? What was better? What wasn't? It was my example of, you know, just we need to get this out, and we'll deal with the consequences of if it wasn't perfect later, because it was more important to act than not. I said this to, actually, I think I was in I did a video for all cabinet employees at some point. And I said, you know, the words, the NIMBLE and Cabinet for Health and Family Services were never used in the same sentence. Mm-hmm. Ever, ever, ever. And yet, we were able to be nimble.
It's an incredible legacy.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned that you're still a little skittish. Can you mm-hmm. talk a little bit about coming out? How
yeah.
did that feel, and when did you feel like you
did? So it's probably slower than most. Probably masked a little longer than most. In May, I went to Jazz Fest. It was great.
Who'd you see? Sorry, I'm a music nerd.
Oh. Okay, there was this guy called Dwayne Dopsey, who was an accordion player. So what I did was I didn't go to the main stages. I hung out at the Zydeco stage and the jazz stage and the blues stage. So, I mean, Mavis Staples, right? How are you never going to get the opportunity to do that again? So, but it was an outside venue, so I felt comfortable, right? But I wore a mask in the bus. I was in the Frenchman Street where all the good, cool music is. I was getting ready to walk in the Spotted Cat. Anyway, so I was outside the Spotted Cat and I looked in and it was packed. And I'm like, I can't go in there. Right? So that's even this May, mm-hmm. right? Found a little club that was great. It was small. They were spacing. They had doors open. It was they had breeze going through. I'm like, I can go in that one. Mm-hmm. I still try to be cognizant of where I am, how many people are there. I'm not perfect. Nobody's going to be perfect. I'm still just a hair skittish. I won't get in something packed indoors. It's time. We have to live our lives. I'm still not sure I'm going to an indoor venue yet. But that's really, different people are going to make different decisions, and it's okay. You get to make different decisions at this point. It is fine. And we all make our individual decisions. I'm 60, over 60. not 37. So, I mean, it's a little bit different decision point for me, right? And it's okay. You get, that is what I hope folks know now is, it's okay to want to get back and have fun and be with people and all that stuff. It's okay. Right. It's okay to be a little, I think it's still okay to be a little skittish. But what I hope we've learned, and I think I've said this a lot, right? I've tried to say this a lot at the press conferences. I've tried to say this a lot when I talk to folks. Is like, if COVID has taught us anything, it's that whatever happens to one person in our community impacts us all. And viruses don't care. They don't care if you're living in a gated community or living under a viaduct, right? It's a virus. It doesn't care. So we need to have care for everybody in our communities. And I mean, you know, I'm Health and Family Services Cabinet. So of course I'm going to think that. But I hope we can get that learning out of COVID. I'm not sure we have. But maybe if we remember that, we keep getting reminded of it, maybe we'll be able to get there and find our best selves.
Yeah. And this is a nice way to wrap up in this last question. So we've been asking everyone that we've talked to on that day. So today is July 26th. How are you feeling?
Tired. So another thing that I've said is that it's going to take us 20 years, right, to understand what decisions were right, what were not, what was better, what wasn't. I mean, I've said it quite a few times in here, we were learning as we were going. We were absolutely learning as we were going. But I know we did the best we could with the information we had. And so, because of that, I have some comfort with what we did. I know we did the best we could. So for the people that were there, for the times that we were living in, you know, all of that, we honestly were wanting to do what was best for the Commonwealth, for Kentucky. And that's all we were trying to do. And I know that. And so I know my motivations. I know the motivations of Dr. Stack. I know the motivations of the governor, right? What is best for the people of Kentucky? And that's where we started. And that doesn't always happen. I've been working in state government for a long time. And that doesn't always happen. But I know it happened here.
Thank you.
Yeah.